Sergey Young is on a fascinating quest to live to 200. As you'll hear, it's not as far-fetched as it might initially sound. But the issue with the longevity industries is not, can we significantly extend a meaningful life, but do we want the lives we already have? Enjoy an immensely thought-provoking episode of The Evolving Leader.
Hi, friends. Welcome to The Evolving Leader. I'm Scott Allender, along with my friend and co-host, Mr. John Gomes. How are you feeling today, John?
I'm feeling intrigued and very curious, and I'm really hoping that I get some profound answers to some very important questions here, because I need them.
Let me set the table today. Our guest is Sergey Young, whose background includes having managed a $2 billion private equity fund. Today, his goal is to live to 200 and to find an affordable way for everyone else to do the same. Where do I sign? Actually, I'm not so sure. I'm struggling to make it through my 40s, so I'll be curious to know why I want to live to be 200, but we'll get there. He believes we are on the brink of a longevity revolution, and as part of his mission to help people to live long, healthy, and happy lives, he founded the 100 Million Longevity Vision Fund. He's a board member at the XPRIZE Foundation. Sergey, welcome to The Evolving Leader.
Thank you.
So, Sergey, can we start with a quick tour of your career and how you came to be interested in the field of longevity?
Well, what a great question. So, just a little bit of personal detail. So, I'm obviously from Russia originally, and some people say that they are from the middle of nowhere. And I'm not this kind of guy. I'm from the end of nowhere. So my hometown was much closer to Japan, just across the sea, like 200 miles, than to regional capital. It was probably 500 miles. So, and it was during Soviet Union, and I was always dreaming just to go to these beautiful countries of United Kingdom, U.S., the smallest country on Earth, Vatican, etc. And so that's the first thing. Second thing is, for some people, becoming an adult is a process. It's just a few years when you just kind of graduate from, you know, your parents' family to your own. For me, it was just one phone call. It was back in 1990, during Perestroika time and Gorbachev. My mom called me and said, "Sergey, we've been supporting you for the first year as a student at university. Unfortunately, both of us lost our jobs, so now it's your turn." And well, this is where this whole exciting story started, because I started to work full-time, study full-time. I'm a big fan of education, so I've actually done 3 degrees in different universities, and one of them is in Warwick Business School in business administration field. And then coming back to your main question about longevity and health, the unfortunate reality for so many of us that for us to be interested in health or in longevity, it's always start with wake-up call. And wake-up call is significant deterioration of either our own health or health of someone we love. So for me, it was lung cancer of my father back in 2005. He survived, but the quality of his life never recovered. And personally, I had high cholesterol problem 6 years ago. And I've been advised to take statins. When I realized I would need to take these drugs till the rest of my life, I actually thought, it's time to start thinking and be more mindful, take responsibility for my own health strategy on my own shoulders. And I started to experiment. I'm not a biohacker, right? My first degree is chemical engineering. So I'm actually very kind of prudent and conservative. But like, there's so many things that we can do in terms of our lifestyle changes, in terms of use of the current science and technology to improve our health and extend our life. And I really like it. And the quality of my life improved. As you already mentioned, my target lifespan is 200 years. So it's been beautiful transformation. I started to share it with the world. And then I thought, if I want to change life of 1 billion people by bringing affordable and accessible version of longevity, I need to support the space with investments. So I set up this relatively small, in financial industry terms, $100 million fund to invest in these brilliant companies and brilliant science and technology, which can transform our healthcare and bring us more healthy and happy years to our life.
Okay, so I admittedly know very little about this field, as evidenced by the way I look, but let's perhaps start by looking at this from a leadership lens, which may be an unusual place to start, but this is a leadership podcast. So the implications to me are vast, as we're already seeing people working much longer than they used to, struggling to save enough money for retirement. Now that we're living longer in America, the Social Security system is strained, to say the least. So can we get your thoughts on why leaders should be thinking about this market from several perspectives, how it changes their marketplaces, their workforces, their personal lives, and does it challenge them to need to rethink the products and services they offer?
Yeah. So look, obviously, I think it's one of the top three or five themes on the macro level that every leader needs to be aware of and take into account. And there's a number of thoughts behind that. One is, I think longevity and the digital version of health is one of the few opportunities to unite our nations. Because there's so many dividing things in the economy, in the social sector today. So the gap between rich and poor is basically enormously high today. It's going to be more and more in the future. So access to very basic but like highly efficient version of technology-based healthcare is a turning point for all of us to become more united, not divided on a country level. So that's one thing. This actually give us the opportunity to expand our market because not everyone today can afford colonoscopy, which is, depending on the country, $2,000 to $5,000 procedure. But almost everyone can afford $19 test called Cologuard, which has exactly the same efficiency in terms of detecting early stage of colon cancer. So that's the magnitude of the change that we experience. All the companies that we're investing in Longevity Vision Fund, improve the current healthcare intervention by 10, 20, not percent times. Mm. And some of them just decrease the cost of healthcare by like 50 times. So that's all great. So that's one. Second thing, I think it's like in every industry that we're trying to disrupt or we're trying to operate, healthcare again is becoming data driven. 1/3 of the data in the world, well, at least in US, is healthcare related data. And that's again, it's amazing opportunity because I think it was in UK quite recently, they prohibited purchase of fax machines for national healthcare system. When was the last time you've seen fax machines, right? I mean, it sounds ridiculous to me, but what I'm saying, again, recognizing the data-driven nature of this world, disruptive power of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and this very important field and many important fields that we engage in is very important. Then workforce. Look, I'm 49. When my father was 49, he was just waiting for 6 years until his retirement. And he was mentally, metaphorically speaking, done with his career. I'm nowhere near that. You know, I have, well, personally, I want to live to 200 years. Not everyone needs to live that long. 3/4 of my life is ahead of me. So changing our demographic preferences, paradigm, recognizing the important nature of different age cohort in our businesses is extremely important. And I also think we leaders need to stop to be binary about this whole, well, it's either full-time job or no job, or it's retirement. So that's important as well. Finding the way to engage and extract the wisdom and experience from older part of the workforce is extremely important as well. And this whole concept of retirement, I think, is changing. Like, funny enough, from longevity perspective, two most dangerous years of your life is the year of your birth, because we still have pretty high infant mortality, and the year of your retirement. So don't think about your retirement. Don't think about retirement of the, you know, older part of your employees or your workforce. You know, think about this in non-binary terms. In terms of products or services, well, the one thing which I actually found very impressive to in what is happening in the digital healthcare in the longevity world today, which I think is super relevant for so many businesses across different sectors, is, well, medicine is becoming much more personalized. So right now it's like, what, drugs, white males, tested drugs on the group of white males, and assume it works for everyone. Right now, if you go to like immuno-oncology in treating cancer, you actually have drug or interventional treatment designed to you personally with the current means of science and technology. And that's a great, it's not a metaphor, it's just a great example how personalized or the things that we offer to the market, whether it's product and services become. It's so this concept of market of one, something created for you. I think it's is a necessity and something that we would need to embrace and think about how we do transform our business models around this whole thing. Not, you don't need to work in healthcare to embrace that. It, I think it applies to so many things that we do here.
Can we go back to what you said a moment ago about the mortality rate for the retirement year being the second most sort of dangerous year of life? Is that directly correlated to a loss of purpose?
Yeah. So every time we talk about our health, there's like a default mode to think about our physical health. But apparently our psychological health or mental health is equally important as well. So the reason I want to live to 200 years is like, I mean, right now it's completely irresponsible promise, because no one on this earth lived more than 122 years. With this in mind, sense of purpose is extremely important. If you have your why, and this is not my quote, yeah, you will always find your reason to live longer, healthier, and happier life as well. And and we tend to think, I think we all came from these times, from these decades when working were a necessity. Remember where I started with a phone call from my mom and I had to work. I was super scared to clean skyscrapers, but the fear of starvation and responsibility for my parents and brother was much stronger than me. So we all have this mentality like, oh, I need to work because, you know, I need to earn money to take care of my kids. This is all changing. I think we all, and specifically it should be a big focus of our leaders. We just need to do this positive reframing of workplace, whether it's virtual or in person, being a place for our social realization.
So in a few weeks' time, you've got your book coming out, The Science and Technology of Growing Young, which caught my eye a few weeks ago when I saw the kind of promotion for it. And I'm sure our listeners are going to be fascinated to get hold of that copy. But can you give us some of the practical things that you're... But both in terms of what people can do right now with the existing technology and knowledge... and I know they can download some of this from your website because you've got some nice practical PDFs that people can download. But what kind of technologies are around? You mentioned one that people may not be aware of and or are coming out soon that might help in the development of extending our healthy lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jean, I mean, this is obviously three questions in one. So book. It's called The Science and Technology of Growing Young. We're already number one new release on Amazon in preventive medicine. This is great. I have four kids. So writing the book, it's like almost having the kid. You know, it was 3 years journey. Amazing. So the structure of the book is I tend, and we at Longevity Vision Fund tend to talk about longevity and digital healthcare in three horizons. So one is horizon one is what you can do today. And this is what we will address in a couple of minutes from now, because I want, you know, all of our leaders, our audience to take away like what I can do tonight or tomorrow morning. So that's today. Then, so even today with all the lifestyle interventions, breakthroughs in science and technology, we can live to 100 years, roughly. And it should be healthy and happy years. I'm not really interested to add like, you know, like the worst versions of our longer years to our lives. So we're talking about health span. So that's 100 years. Horizon two is actually technology and science that we're investing in through Longevity Vision Fund. And they're going to be available to us in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And the most promising technologies there, and if you're interested, we can discuss it later today, is I love three things. One is gene editing and gene therapy, because it gives us the opportunity to redefine ourselves as a species. Like, we already know 3,000 genes in our DNA, which are responsible for aging process. And age is like the biggest risk factor for us to suffer from cancer, heart disease, neurodegenerative diseases, and diabetes. And this is probably 80-85% of death after age of 50. So that's super important. I actually believe that the biggest obstacle for us to use gene editing and gene therapy going to be regulations and ethics of our society rather than science and technology. So in 10, 20 years time, it's transformational for us as human. It's going to be kind of humans 2.0. So then, and as I already mentioned, there's the third horizon of longevity, human avatars, human brain, artificial intelligence integration, internet of body, nanobots in our blood. Again, this is 25 to 50 years from now. And we don't need to worry about this today. But then the issue is to enjoy Horizon 2 technologies, to enjoy like, you know, gene therapy, gene editing, ability to regenerate your organs, to enjoy longevity and appeal, because we do have quite a number of candidates for age reversal drugs at the moment. We just need to work through trials, scientific trials, and regulatory approvals for that. So that's going to be available in 10, 15 years. But before that, we just need to stay on longevity bridge. We need to live through horizon one. And so then our body and mind is worth expanding its resource. Because if we're all going to be in a fragile, unhealthy state in 10, 15 years from now, it does make a lot of sense to extend our life anyway. So that's the concept of horizons.
Can you expand a little bit more on what that entails? You mentioned the ethics involved. Can you expand on what that is for our listeners?
On the ethical side.
Yeah.
I call it morality of immortality. Like, what are the ethical side of life extension? Because if you ask people on the street today whether they want to live longer, depending on the country, it's 60 to 80% of people who would say no to radical life extension opportunities. So we, as a sector, done a very bad job explaining what is the value to society the science and technology brings. Because it's my favorite topic, but not for everyone. In fact, when I've done the chapter called Morality of Immortality for my book, the feedback that I got from publisher, like, Sergey, can you take out this chapter from the book? And I'm like, why is that? This is super important. Well, apparently the answer was that this chapter can be like a separate book. It actually applies to all 12 chapters that I have in this book, because human body and mind is the most complex thing that has been ever created by Mother Nature. Nevertheless, so what you can do today, Scott and John, I really wanted to go through that. So Horizon 1, five longevity buckets, your five longevity choices that you can do today. So one is, I'm going to have my 30 seconds. I actually speak about this one, is your annual regular health checks. Right now, the level of technology that we have, like in terms of this amazing MRI machines, in terms of early diagnostic tools, CT, ultrasound devices that we use, is amazing. 20 years ago, cancer was keys of death. People were deferring their cancer test date, because if you know you have a cancer, I mean, your shelf life is what, 6 to 12 months? Well, it's not anymore. It's still a very dangerous disease. We still need to fight with that. But like, if you manage to do a diagnostic of cancer at really early stage, recovery rates today is from 93% to 100%. That's amazing. We're right in the middle of winning the war against cancer. And the same applies to heart disease. Same applies to diabetes as well. So most important thing, the most important day of your life every year is the day of your health checkup. And it should be as comprehensive as possible. It's not a rocket science. All healthcare providers, they're actually keen to do that because cost of prevention and cost of treatment disease at early stage is, again, remember these figures, 10 to 20 times less than addressing this in reactive way. So that's one. Second thing is don't die stupid, like just passive longevity thing, using the seat belts, not overdosing with alcohol or drugs, quitting smoking. I mean, this is very old tech, but this is extremely important because smoking is like minus 10 years from your lifespan statistically. Third is a diet. There's a lot of science. Well, there's a lot of disagreement what actually extends our life, but there's one agreement that decreasing your caloric intake by 20 to 25% actually extends your life by at least 2, 3, or almost 5 years. And it's healthy and happy years as well. So making sure you decrease your caloric intake is extremely important. And it's, I mean, it's easier to say, it's more difficult to do it, but like the way to do it is fasting or intermittent fasting. It should be more plant-based because the caloric intensity of plants is much lower. And obviously replacing sugar drinks with water. Then fourth thing is physical activity. And we have this mentality that physical activity is I'm either running marathon or I'm just sitting and watching football, right, on my TV. Well, there's something in between. You know, use your wearables, whether it's Apple Watch, Fitbit, Oura Ring, Whoop from Amazon, it doesn't matter. Count your 10,000 steps a day. Well, that's just an amazing way to transform your body and bring a physical activity to your life. It's just another few years to your life as well. And this actually important point about the power of wearables. So speaking about technology, I think it was a question from John. Our wearables becoming our personalized healthcare devices. The current version of Apple Watch, can detect 5 different types of heart issues, can detect that. You can do electrocardiogram. You can count your steps. You can measure your sleep cycle and create like a feedback cycle, around the quality and quantity of your sleep. That's just amazing. They would add a couple of features there in the next 2 years. And that's like 90 to 95% of the information you need to measure about your health on a regular basis. In fact, when I'm doing a lot of pro bono stuff in longevity field. So I'm advising largest corporations on earth to do their corporate longevity programs. Like making sure people leverage their wearables is one of the first things that we ask leaders to do. Actually, the other thing, to replace a lot of food with vegetarian choices or plant-based things in vending machines or in canteens. That works as well. And the fifth bucket of today is peace of mind. Exactly what we discussed. I think it was Scott's question about sense of purpose, meditation, decreasing your cortisol level with meditation. There's so many meditation apps these days, like Calm, Headspace, you name it. Like you take or you use the one that you like. Quality of sleep is very important. So if you sleep well, my rule is 8 hours in the bed, which is 7 hours of sleep, your chances to get Alzheimer's disease is 40% lower. Mm. And that's important. There's not a lot that we can do in terms of prevention of neurodegenerative diseases today, just because of where we are in terms of science and technology of this pretty new cohort of disease that we're facing. And meditation, sleep, sense of purpose, act of kindness, just simply social realization is extremely important. This is all boring stuff, but that's exactly what you can do today. And I think the power of transformation, you're just becoming more positive, healthy, and happy person. So that's horizon one. Again, we discussed horizon two, 3 most exciting pieces of science and technology, like breakthroughs in this field for us, is gene editing and gene therapy, is organ regeneration, ability to replace our organs like in old cars, then we extend the resource of the old cars, and then drug interventions. Because right now, if you go to pharmacy and you ask for drug against aging, they would think you're crazy. They would think, or they would send you to cosmetics or to supplements. In 10, 15 years time, it's going to be completely different. We'll have a new generation of drugs which address aging processes and root cause of aging in our body, and therefore decrease the risk, mortality risk from all these killer diseases, as they call them, like cancer, heart disease, neurodegenerative diseases, diabetes as well. So that's important. So then morality of immortality. When I first, I think we went to Vatican with, I think it was Peter Diamantis, Tony Robbins. There was so many amazing people. It was a conference about regenerative medicine and longevity back in 2018. We even had an audience with Pope. And the question to the audience was like, who want to extend their life by 10, 20 years? And we got like 15% of people signing up for that. I was so shocked. And I'm still shocked, by the way. I still couldn't figure out the answer. So what I realized that we humans, we created technology and science to extend our life. But we haven't created a life that we want to extend.
Yeah.
There's so many things that we need to fix in this world, on this planet. I think it was in the beginning of this conversation today, we discussed this inequality gap. This is awful, right? Less than 1% of people on the planet own what? Like 70% of wealth. So obviously we're looking at more equal distribution of wealth here. But again, my contribution to that is investing in technology, which would completely democratize the cost of healthcare. Like $19. I mean, I've been working for $100 a month, so I know what $19 means. But it's like, if you're creative enough, there's just a couple of coffees in Starbucks, right? If you're creative enough with your Starbucks coffee formula, right? So that's one. So this is just one thing that we need to solve. Well, the other thing, and I do think leaders, managers, visionaries are the first people on earth to think about this. If we all gonna live much longer, well, let's say 120 years, how our life will change? Because right now it's all pretty fixed. I mean, just, you're born, you study, you work for what, 30 or 40 years, then you retire and then you die, right? In the process, you get married once or twice, and then you have kids if you want. So I do think the paradigm of life will change, and it might be just the number of beautiful mini lives or number of careers that you can change every decade. So this actually puts completely different requirements in terms of how we think about ourselves and about taking new opportunities in our life. It's never too late to start educate yourself on a new topic, right? This whole longevity thing, I've never had a passion in life until I turned 43 years. Old or young, and I discovered they have high cholesterol level. So that's type of transformation that we all need to be able to do. Like, but then the question is like, what will happen with our marriage? Right now, depending on the country, 2/3 of the marriages going to divorce stage in 3, 5, 7 years. Again, depending on the countries. So would we change the social construct into kids raising partnerships? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm happily married with 4 kids, so I don't want to do it. But like, can we live for 100, 150 years with the same person? Ooh, I don't know. So then what?
I'm just thinking what my wife is thinking now of another 60, 70 years of marriage with me. I go home and ask her about that. That's going to be
It might be a little bit boring, right?
I'm just wondering how many seasons of the Evolving Leader podcast we're going to have to do.
Look, we're going to rediscover ourselves in a big way, Scott. So this will come. Like, and then us focused on money, work, we actually, I think we lose this connection to ourselves when we are kind people who wants to change the world, help our kids or people in our communities to become a better version of ourselves. So there's a huge list. We will have so many more years and decades to rediscover ourselves and become a better version of ourselves. It's almost like a different paradigm. Or think about dictators. If we're going to be living longer, does it mean the people of, well, say, North Korea will suffer endlessly? We don't want to do that, right? We don't want to support this as well. And even it's some scholastic questions, I don't want to impose on the audience today, but like, if you think about living longer, the way it would look for you is like, it's not going to be like one day you're going to decide how many years you're going to live. It's going to like every 5 to 10 years, you will need to make a decision whether you're going to live another 10 years. And in the current religious context, in so many countries today, it's called playing God or even suicide. How are we going to deal with that? And even if it's okay for society to accept that, like, will I personally, Sergey Yan, will have a bravery to make this decision? There's, again, so many questions. And then finally, there's this whole relationship with Mother Nature. Like today, we just drop plastic. We don't recycle it. Because so many of us think that, okay, I'm not going to survive for that long. So it's going to be just next generations who will just need to sort out this plastic shit for me. Well, it's not the case anymore. We will live with consequences of our own actions. And we just need to deal with that. So there's so many ethical questions that we need to solve. We just need to create like a completely different, much more positive version of the world and society to embrace the idea of longer living.
Here on The Evolving Leader, we are committed to stretching the leadership conversation in every episode, and we invite you to help spread the word. If you have learned or been inspired by something you heard on this podcast, chances are others would too. Please consider sharing your favorite episode with your network on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks for listening. We're glad you're here.
So let's take your goal of living to 200. And I think, yeah, you know, obviously some people will react to that, but you've explained it in a much more nuanced way, which is it's a kind of North Star intent to help you think beyond the limits of where you are at the moment. It's not a necessarily even realistic, but it helps you to reframe everything through these horizons. So in order to bring this to life, can we just get a sense of your roadmap across those three horizons and what it might look like over the next, you know, 130 years, if indeed that's possible. So let's start with horizon one. Now most of our listeners can't see you. Some of them might see you on our YouTube portion of this, but you know, you look incredibly fit, healthy, and alive for somebody of your age, and beautiful head of hair as well. So, you know, obviously doing lots of things right. Tell us what you're doing today, and also tell us the things you struggle with most in Horizon 1 across those five buckets.
Yeah, okay. So where I want to start, and it sounds a little bit unusual, but that's like a premise of your question, John. And I just want to talk about psychological aspects of aging. The fact that I've decided to live 200 years, it's changed a lot in my life. Imagine every morning I wake up and I have 3/4 of my life ahead of me. Again, there is no science or technology today to help me to live to 200 years. But just the fact that I'm thinking that my you know, target lifespan is really far away, open up new horizons. Because if I was about to retire, I would never start this whole longevity thing, right? Longevity Vision Fund, change the career, and starting to do like more my fourth education in biology. But like, you know, the fact that it's just another 151 years, it's just a mental trick for me to be alive. And I actually, my mantra is living 200 years in the body of 25 years old man. So my body started to work differently. And however funny it sounds, there is a scientific evidence that if your target psychological age is much lower than your calendar age, you actually start to look younger. Some of the processes, aging processes in your bodies slow down or reverse, and you actually look better. I obviously doing a lot of things for me to look in line with my mission. Because well, that's the beauty of working in longevity field. You can really afford yourself to look like unfit and unhealthy man, simply because you want to project completely different thing. So, but again, this called psychological aging trick is very important. And if you want to do a little experiment, just for 1 month, every morning and evening, for 1 minute, think that, well, if you are like, I'm 49, so I'm thinking, you know, I want to be in a body of mind of 25 years old man. You know, obviously, I will never reach that, right? At least based on the current state of technology and science. But just thinking that changed a lot in your mindset. So that was about psychological innovation. So what do I do? Like, I used to work in consulting in McKinsey. And I solved a lot of complex problems. Sometimes like every second engagement is on a global scale, like on the scale of the planet. So I'm always like, I kind of like this whole rules, but I'm always asking like, what are the tricks? What are the shortcuts? You know, how can I avoid following 30 longevity choices checklist from Sergey Young? I don't have 30 longevity choices, but I do have infographics on sergeyyoung.com. But so the tricks are like really the things that are core, I think, to living longer, looking healthy and younger. So one is this checkup thing is super important. And our problem that we always go to doctor when disease manifests itself. And this is almost like stage 4 of development of it. We need to be more proactive about this whole thing. And finally, we're living in an intersection of time and development of science and technology when we can actually do something about it. So please do that. So that's one. Second, in terms of passive longevity, I'm not really struggling with that. So I'm not smoking. You know, my relationship with alcohol, it's like, you know, I can have one or two glasses of wine per occasion, and that's it. Coffee, well, this is like wine and coffee is everyone interested. Well, what do I do with that? One or two espresso a day is cool, hopefully just in the beginning of the day, so you don't interfere with your sleep cycle, is kind of cool. But also this whole concept of passive longevity and not taking the risk. Like, think about driverless cars. So when we will have driverless cars, mortality rates from the road accidents will drop by a factor of 10. This is 1.2 million deaths a year on the planet, simply because we humans are suboptimal species to drive the car. And computer is actually doing this in a better way. Or, you know, I've been to North and South Pole. I'm big fan of traveling. But like when I had a chance to, when I was considering climbing Mount Everest, I was just looking at statistics, and unfortunately mortality rate there is 6% or above. And like with a father of 4 kids, and man with a mission to change 1 billion lives, you know, I decided not to take this risk. And I know a lot of people, like, I'm sorry to go on and on with it, like motorcycles. Mortality rate from accidents with motorcycles is like 17 to 19 times, not percent, higher than, you know, like cars accidents. This is just statistics. So don't take unnecessary risk. Diet. I mean, it's really easy to say, well, Sergey and guys, you need to decrease your calorie intake. But like, how are you going to do it? Because I don't have internal discipline to control myself on the diet front. 3 times a day, 7 days a week. So what I do, I really switch to the plant-based, because with plants, you don't even need to measure the volume. I can have like the whole table of vegetables, but their caloric intensity is so low that you're going to be okay. This is great. And obviously decreasing the meat and fish intake. I'm not religious about meat and fish thing. So I still kind of take wild fish occasionally and the organic meat from time to time, very rarely. But there's this whole thing, like the caloric intensity of red meat is like 5 times higher than vegetables or the grain. Sorry, not vegetables, the grain pieces. So that's like a way to manage that. Well, moreover, I think industrial food that we have now is has a lot of things which shouldn't be there, like antibiotics. 70% of antibiotics, at least in States, is consumed by animals on a farm. This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's on the food piece. So I'm really struggling like to keep the discipline, but my shortcuts is like more plant-based. Unfortunately, no sugar drinks. I love sugar drinks. Yeah, my body responds to that, but I couldn't really afford to do it. And frankly speaking, if you're looking for one thing, just run on vegetables for like 2 weeks of your life and you'll see, you'll be like, as shiny and as healthy as you've never been. So that's like a one change that I recommend people to do, like 14, 21 days running on vegetables. It just, it creates completely different structure of your body, level of energy and level of health as well. So this is great. In terms of physical activity, I'm really struggling there with adding to my 10,000 steps a day, like, because you need to do cardio, you need to do stretching, you need to do, was it heavy lifting?
Resistance.
Yeah. So you need to do this, actually. Physical exercise need to be very diversified to support your health. But I'm working 2 shifts. I'm having my investment life, and then I have my longevity vision fund thing, and then I have 4 kids, so I'm really struggling with that. So like, but at least 10,000 steps a day, you know, going through my circles, it's been really helpful. And I think the beauty of wearables is that they give you immediate feedback, so it's not like you're looking back for like 30 days like, what was my physical activity level? It's today, it's right now. Stand up and walk for a couple of minutes type of thing. So that I find it really useful. I mean, frankly speaking, I find it really transformational. Since I started to use Fitbit, I'm now on the Apple Watch platform. But, you know, like whatever wearables you would prefer, just make sure it gives you feedback. And that's been transformational. And then in terms of the fifth buckets, which I call peace of mind, which is sleep, meditation, sense of purpose, the one with Scott mentioned. I think meditation has become really technological these days. So I kind of like that. And so for some time I used Muse, like this this device on your head, which gives you feedback when you meditate. And if you think about this, I mean, it's really difficult to give someone feedback when he or she meditates, right? You don't want to like slap him and say, oh, you're doing a great job. But so they use the sounds of nature to give you, like, if you're doing like really bad job, this is like a thunderstorm, it's windy. And if you're doing a great job meditating, it's like birds singing, something really nice in your ears. So I kind of like it. But also I think importance of sleep was the biggest breakthrough in fifth bucket and peace of mind. And it came for me with the book of Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. Amazing book. So because before that, I was just using my sleep hours as like almost endless credit. Will I still be in performance mode if I sleep 6 hours, 5 hours? Can I do like early exercise by waking up early? But right now, 8 hours in the bed, 7 hours of sleep. It's super important. I do remember, I think it's Dr. Jack Cradle from one of the London-based centers of human performance optimization and recovery for people who went through cancer. He started a conversation with me. I'm like, what's your like number one advice on being healthy and living longer? And he started with, Sergey, every evening, we have an opportunity to visit the best clinic in the world. We go to bed and we sleep. And I thought, what a nice way of putting in one phrase the importance, yeah, and underline importance of sleep. So that's a little bit lengthy way to respond what I'm doing now and what you can do. But also, I think it's important to recognize that this whole complex nature of human body and mind. Because if we would have one solution to aging, it's either Mother Nature and evolution or science would solve it already. So it's not the case. It's always complexity of the things. There's not going to be like a silver bullet solution, like one advice from Sergey Young or any other interesting people. So it's always a combination of things. So I think it's important to recognize. So that, but that's like our job, like for every leader, managing complexity is extremely important skill.
Out of all of the investments you're making at the moment and the things that you are coming across in your ecosystem, yep, in the next 5 years, where do you think you're going to be in Horizon 2? Where would you place your bets there?
Yeah, so we invested in 16 companies, but the most interesting thing that we looking at 200 companies a year. So I'm having 200 conversations every year with brilliant minds, with amazing entrepreneurs who transform in the healthcare and our view of human health. This is amazing. What is the most promising? Obviously, I think we're going to win the war against cancer because of this early detection, different devices and boxes and our ability to detect that. So that's amazing. And then even if you get cancer at early stage, it's going to be like gene editing, gene therapy, immune oncology, all this kind of genomic medicine stuff, which is going to help us to solve it. Well, in fact, I think we underestimate where we are in terms of the use of gene editing and gene therapy. So many COVID vaccines like Moderna is actually gene therapy. So we, in the last 20 years, from helping literally a handful of people with extremely dangerous like CRISPR gene editing experiments, because they had nothing to lose, they were about to die. When they were like half of population of the planet now can enjoy gene therapy. We just don't realize that this is, that's it. But the most interesting company that we invested in, and we actually invested there, it was earlier supported by Jim Mallon and Juvenescence. It's a company called Lygenesis. And what they do, they regrow artificial organs inside our body. So like, think about liver transplant. Liver transplantation is extremely expensive surgery today. It's $100,000. It's, as far as I remember, it's $800,000 procedure. A lot of foreign donor organs get rejected because your body thinks it's a foreign organ. It is. So it switch on autoimmune response to reject that. And a lot of people die because ratio, like supply-demand ratio on donors, on organ donors, is like 1 to 10. So people waiting in the queue for 6, 9, 12 months, not all of them can survive for that long. What Lygenesis does, it takes donor liver. It's split it to 50 to 70 pieces. So that's the opportunity to help 50 to 70 people. It uses very simple laparoscopic surgery to put it inside your lymph node. And then in the course of 3 to 6 months, like a liver B, another liver is growing in your lymph node. And it takes out part of the function from your liver, which is suffering right now or non-functioning right now. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And when I think we were considering them like 2 years ago, and I thought it's just a sci-fi. Since then, they've done 100% successful operations with mice, dogs, primates, pigs. And today, they're starting human trials. Earlier this year, they got FDA approval to start human trials. This is amazing.
Wow.
And again, think about the cost of it. It's just, again, 50 to 70 times lower than today's 800,000. So I want all of us, all of the people, specifically people in need, to be able to have access to this very democratized version of healthcare.
Tell me about how you help people get into the right mindset to adopt these behaviors. You're saying so much rich stuff, and it makes perfect sense And I'm imagining some people thinking back to what you said earlier about living the kind of life I'd want to extend. And some might be hearing you going, well, I don't want to limit myself to two cups of coffee. And I quite like living these sort of, especially younger people might be saying, you know, I love to go out and live a different, more active lifestyle that doesn't include all these sort of health consciousness things. How do you help people through that sort of false dichotomy between building a quantity of life at the expense of quality of life or quality of experience? How do you help people shift? Or is that a problem you run into?
Yeah. So obviously the problem of influencing other minds and hearts is the biggest one for everyone. Specifically, if you're leading something like a movement or organization or your family, is a tough one. So first I started to make a change on like person by person basis. And this is where this whole 200 years figure came from. Because initially I just started with 100 years. Guys, let's live healthy and happy 100 years. People were asking the question, what do we need to do? Eat healthy, exercise, sleep well. And they were like, okay, my mom told me that, Sergey. So it was boring. Then I created Second Horizon. And I started to use like 150 years old figure. Let's live 250 years. Let's just enjoy it through Horizon 2 technologies. People still were pretty bored. So I created the third horizon in 200 years. So first I shocked people with 200 years figure. I got their attention. And at least I have certain like a span credit to feed my Horizon 1 stuff. Because this is like the only thing that you can do today to change your lifespan and health span. So that's a trick. Again, this old 200 years figure is out of necessity, not necessarily from reliable picture and promise of science and technology today. So that's one. So then I thought, okay, if I want to change 1 billion lives, it's going to be very difficult to operate on this person by person basis, on the individual basis. Because what has happened? We are pretty lazy species. Well, this is the way, this is survival, right? If I can avoid doing something, you know, I would avoid this. So what I've done, I was just trying to look on at this from completely different structural level. Because the choices you have is not only do it one by one, but to work with corporations and to work with governments. So I started to do a lot of programs. Again, it's all for free. On the basis of corporations and on the country basis. In fact, my resolution for this year is to find one or two countries so I can help them develop national longevity program and extend life, improve life of all their population. So that's my resolution for this year. And I've done a number of like longevity at work programs when I'm helping corporations to transform their wellness or health programs into longevity programs, creating longevity enabling environments in their office space and helping their employees to thrive, be healthy. The largest I've done was 300,000 people in 20 plus countries. I just couldn't use their name. I don't want to. But the way you do it, you go to the top and you have an engagement from C-level executives. That's like the fastest way. So my two guys is always founder of or CEO or both. And like head of people. So if I have rapport and if I sold the idea of healthy and happy living to them, and the fact that their mission as a leaders is to bring it to their employees and to help them, then the rest is fine.
One last question. How can people pre-order your book?
Great. So it's very simple these days. Go to Amazon and pre-order The Science and Technology of Growing Young. You'll really enjoy it. We have, you know, super positive feedback on the text. And if you read only one chapter from this book, go to Morality of Immortality. This is the most exciting topic for me. How we need to change our life to embrace this breakthroughs in science and technology. I think it's a fascinating topic. And it's also give you a lot of food for reflections.
So, Sergey, I think what you have done in our time together is give us a incredibly provocative frame for rethinking about lifespan and health. Health span is a much better way of thinking about it, as you said. And as you start to describe it with these horizons, it makes much more sense than the 200 target, which seems, you know, kind of, as you say, very provocative and shocking.
Great.
And as you're talking, and I'm thinking about, so, like, you know, if I look at myself, I'm a little bit older than you, so I probably, you know, in conventional terms, I've got maybe somewhere between 20 and 30 years left, as opposed to, you know, this way of thinking, which is maybe, you know, 70 to 100 years. It's a completely different worldview. But it boils down to something very profound, which is I have to choose to do that. I have to choose now to do that. I can't. And you said, you know, that each of these horizons, death will be a choice rather than, you know, inevitability. And that's a really profound shift for humanity to consider from a leadership and a personal perspective. And I think, you know, that resonates with me at a very deep level in terms of something that's personally challenging. So thank you for that, because it's been intriguing and not necessarily what we thought it was going to be. So thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today, Sergey. Really appreciate it. This has been brilliant. Thank you.
Cheers, Guy. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, John.
And until next time, remember, the world is evolving. Are you?